Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127-games.com.
Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 135, Swamped Kickstarter with Ben Gerber and Dennis Hoyle. That's right, this is episode 135, and I am very excited to welcome new and longtime listeners alike to this episode because I am joined by two very special guests. One of them's been on several times in the past, and the other is a first-time guest, so it's going to be very exciting because the very first person I'm going to mention is head honcho for Troll in the Corner, but even more importantly, he's going to be talking about his brand new game that's being kickstarted. It's pretty amazing from what I've been able to tell, and we're going to hear all about it from Mr. Ben Gerber. Ben, how are you today?
I'm doing very well, Jonathan. Thank you for having me on.
And then Dennis Hoyle is one of the co-founders of Bellwether Games, which is the publisher for the Kickstarter game called Swamped. So, Dennis, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks.
So why don't we just dive right in and talk about Swamped? Ben, do you want to maybe start us off and just explain what Swamped is and a little bit of the behind the scenes of inspiration and the design that went into creating it?
Sure. Well, Swamped is a semi-cooperative game for 2 to 4 players. Takes about 20, 30 minutes to play. And we set it up for ages 13 plus. But I will warn folks that if they happen to find me at a convention and I have my younger daughter with me, she's 9 and she will kick your butt at this game. So essentially what it is, you have been hired by this, sort of pharmaceutical research conglomerate to go into the most deadly swamps in the world to look for a particular herb called King's Foil. You're trying to find this plant because it has some medicinal, properties that they can use. And there are 3 other types of treasures that you can find here as well. You can find mushrooms, you can find roots, and you can find exotic animals. So what makes it semi-cooperative is in order to finish the game, everybody who's playing, and we're all in the same boat going through the swamp, has to collect at least 3 King's Foil. That's the cooperative part. The semi part is that everybody else also has their own characters, and each character has their own set of goals that they're trying to accomplish as well. So the way the game really works is as you're going through the swamp and the swamp is growing as you're playing the game, the map is continuing sort of down the table as you're putting new cards down at the end of every round. Everybody's trying to get that King's Foil, but everybody's also trying to get their own objectives. And my objective may be to collect, I don't know, 5 mushrooms. And Jonathan, your objective may be to get as many bits of the map set up as you possibly can because you're going to score points as the map grows. So while we're all trying to sort of steer this boat and find what we need, there's another element to this game as well, is that there's a nasty crocodile who happens to inhabit these swamps, and he's following the boat and trying to do his best to sort of take a bite of what's inside. So everybody's trying to go for the same goal of 3 King's Foil. We're all trying to get our own goals, and we're also all trying to avoid the crocodile. And last but not least, too, if you run out of cards before any of the rounds ends, well, you're stuck in the swamp for sort of a long, wet, cold night. So that's the gist of the game.
Does the crocodile make a ticking noise?
It could. Yeah. We haven't built that into the game. But it could. And I've also found sometimes what helps when you're playtesting this game is if you take your smartphone and you download a crocodile soundboard that does all the really low sounds that the crocodile makes, and you just repeatedly mash it on other people's turns, that adds to the effect. At least it adds to the game for me. As for where the game came from, it started off as a bit of a different design, and it was something that I was toying around with. And the elements that came through, the really neat, unique parts, I think, are the movement parts. And correct me if I'm wrong here, Dennis, but that's kind of what caught your eye when you first saw this as well. Mm-hmm. So I was toying around with this small game that just had a sort of a pile of cubes and these cards that you could change the direction, and that would determine who gets to move how many spaces per every round. And I happened to have this pass in front of Dennis's eyes at some point about a year and a half ago, And he was intrigued by it as well. And then we started moving forward. So we've been developing this game now for, a little over a year and a half. I sent him the original idea. He sent back some other ideas. He started running with the design, started developing it. His buddy Jonathan, who does all the artwork and all the graphic design, came in and started developing it as well. And then they got back to me with more ideas, and we sort of have this I don't know how to best describe it. We're online. Jonathan and Dennis are close together physically, but we've been just sort of interacting a lot, especially over the past couple of months as things have been ramping up, doing a lot of playtesting and design testing, and Dennis has been getting a ton of feedback from other playtesters as well, and now here we are at the Kickstarter, about, 4 days into the Kickstarter.
That pretty much sums it up.
Yeah.
Dennis, I'm kind of curious. I know Ben said that he thinks maybe it was the movement aspect of the game that really appealed to you for wanting to pick this up and do it as a Kickstarter. But I know that Ben he's been designing games for a very long time, all sorts of ones, and he's self-published a few, and he has all sorts of different things in the works. Were there other parts of Swamped that really just said to you, oh, I need to grab this and I need to work on it now and I need to, make an arrangement to bring this to people?
Yeah, sure. I think for me, probably the movement element, the element of the different orientations on the cards. So in the game, there's numbers on each of the corners of the cards. So each card has a different, depending on how you play it, impacts all the different players differently. So that was unique. And then also just the quickness of the play, really appealed to me. And I felt like there was something that, that we could really develop it into something, that was really efficient, quick gameplay that had a lot of depth to it. And so after, working through it and developing with Ben over the last year and a half, obviously that's something that it turned into. My initial impression was, it turned out to be correct that the game, could really turn into something really amazing and really great. And that's what happened. And that's obviously why we ended up deciding to kickstart it and to move forward with all the graphic design and make it what it is today. So those are the main two things, kind of the unique orientation of the cards and how it's played, and then mix that together with a quick, fast gameplay. Oh, and one other thing I should mention is just the small number of components. Mm-hmm. That was one of the ways that Ben kind of shopped it out was, hey, this is a micro game. Is anybody looking for micro games? And we were, and we liked doing small games. And Swamped in particular felt like it's something that we could really keep it to a, just an amazingly small size for the level of gameplay that would be included in it. What you'll see on the Kickstarter page is that the base game is only 35 cards. We threw in two extra pieces, that boat and the crocodile. And from that small deck of cards and the two pieces, there's just so many different things that are included in this game, so many different experiences that you can have. So that kind of my initial impression that, this is a micro game that would have a lot of depth to it, turned out to be correct, and we're really excited about the end product.
We've been sort of telling people that it's, or at least I've been telling people that it's like a $40 or $50 game that we just sort of taken down to everything we really like about all of those games and put it into a $12 package and a 20 to 30 minute play time. So instead of spending 15, 20 minutes setting up, 2 hours playing, and then, 5 or 10 minutes putting it away, in that time, you could get 8, 9 games of Swamped in. Or get 3 games of Swamped in it and move on to something else as well and still get that sort of big game feel to it. So that's one of the things that I really enjoy about it. And that's one of the reasons why, I think it's destined to do good, because Dennis, Jonathan and I, we played this game a lot. We've done a lot of playtesting with it, and I'm still not even close to being sick of playing it.
Right.
It's still a game that I enjoy sitting down and playing. If somebody were to come over and say, I have somebody coming over tonight and we're probably going to play Swamped. Just because it's a fun game to play.
Yeah, and one of those things that really kind of keeps the appeal is the just the interaction between the players. So Ben was describing kind of the semi-cooperative model, which is really hot right now. We kind of compare it a little bit to Dead of Winter, just in a lot smaller size. It's not based on Dead of Winter or anything like that, but there are obviously some similar elements that you'll find just in a much smaller package. And so a big part of that is the interaction between the players. And a lot of times what we find when we're doing playtests of Swamp is that people will sit down, once they learn how to play, once they get going into the Swamp, that these really unique interactions come up based on who's playing it. you know, if people feel really cooperative, then they'll take more of the cooperative stance and they'll talk through how are we going to get around the crocodile in this instance, or what cards need to be played so that we don't get swamped here. Or if they're, you know, wanting to be more competitive, then they take a more competitive approach and it's a more risky style of play, that may end up with one person, you know, earning more points, but it could also lead the entire boat, you know, into deadly peril, as I often say. So it's really fun to watch and see people interact. And it's just a really natural interaction too, because since you all share the same piece and you all take turns moving the boat, there's, that ties you together, whether you want to or not. So if you think of, you know, maybe a Dead of Winter, you share the same colony, sure, but you also have your own kind of players and characters that are doing all sorts of different things. So there's not as always a lot of opportunity to really collaborate or talk or feel like you're kind of tied together. But in Swamped, it feels like you're tied together because you literally are. I mean, you share the same boat, both literally and figuratively, if I could say that. But.
Yeah. In the same boat. And I've noticed that a lot too. Even when I brought this to Total Confusion, Jonathan, and I was demonstrating it to a bunch of people, and we get to sit down and we get to do a couple different play tests. Depending on who was there, every game that we played when we played through the whole game just had a little bit of a different feel. Some folks are a lot more competitive about things. You know, when I sat down and played it with some younger folks, it was a lot more, oh, but if you move over here, you know, because you have a three, then the croc won't be able to catch us this turn at all. And then maybe you, so I think that lends to it. It's different for different, game groups. And I know a lot of people who, have started getting together for these like weekly or monthly game nights at various pubs and whatnot. And not to toot our own horn, Dennis, but this strikes me as like a perfect pub game. Cause it's tiny. It can fit in your pocket. You can pull it out and you can play it. And you can get loud and sort of raucous with it as well. And in 20 minutes over, and then the next four people can play it.
Yeah, I think you're right. Absolutely. And yeah, I've noticed that too, is that different groups of players just play it differently. And obviously the small size comes into play, as well. And the box is going to be relatively small too. Mm-hmm. And so it definitely has that portability aspect that you look for in most micro games. And has been saying the setup is quick and the playtime is quick and all of that.
I think it's common to many a gamer, but whenever I'm getting together with people, and if I'm having someone or a group of people over to my place, or if I'm going to a game store to play a game, I might have it intended where we're going to play something large, or something that's going to take a lot of time. So a few weeks ago, I got together with a buddy, Adrian, and we were playing the board game 1775. Mm-hmm. And that takes a couple hours to play. It's a fantastic game by Academy Games. But sometimes it ends early, or sometimes you just want to have something else with you just in case someone might not show up that you're going to play this. Or a lot of what I talk about here on Wargaming Recon involves miniatures, in the sense that you have toy soldiers that you have to assemble, paint, and so forth. And that takes a lot of time to do, but you need to actually have the people, one, to show up, and two, to remember their stuff. And if that doesn't happen, I've always found it to be useful to have something in my backpack with me. And for me, Swamped is a kind of game that I could do that with, whereas currently I bring something like Puerto Rico or Zombie Dice with me. This mm-hmm. could just as easily fit in, and it also seems ideal for a convention type of game, where you go into a con, you're waiting in line, you pull it out, you play it for a little while. And you're right, the demand is huge for this, and I think part of it is that there's a whole demographic of people of certain ages that just, for whatever reason, have shorter attention spans, and they're not going to play a game that takes 9 or 10 hours. Or even someone like myself, I'm not going to play a Talisman just because it, as good as it is, it's too darn long for me. And it's amazing, but I'd rather play like something, the time limit of Swamped, where I could spend, you know, my time playing this and play like 8 or 10 times instead of playing that one game of Talisman. And one thing that I think you guys have really hit on with this is that I'm going to work with you, but maybe not really. Mm-hmm. Is how I like to phrase it. Cause I think of Shadows Over Camelot, which has been a long time favorite of mine. And I'm not sure if you're both familiar with it, but it's a Arthurian board game where you each play a different knight of the round table, and one of you is a traitor and you don't know who it is. So you are helping everyone else. You're trying to get the grail. You're trying to get Excalibur and so forth, but you're trying not to help too much, and you have to do it in such a way that no one knows that you are the traitor until you choose to reveal yourself. So you want to keep it hidden, and that kind of, is this someone here is working against us, and I can't kind of tell, that mystery is great. And I think it's also fantastic that you have it in Swamped, and not that you know, it's intended for it to be a mystery, but like if you have your side quest and you want to get these objectives, you may not necessarily want someone else to know that because maybe it's in your best interest for them to not know quite yet. And so that kind of, are they really my friends or not sort of right. thing, I think is huge.
Yeah, with Swamp, and what you're getting at kind of is kind of the mole mentality, right? There have been mole games that have been around for a long time. Even if you go back to like playing Mafia or, I mean, Werewolf is a similar style, like there is a player that's out here whose motive is just to kind of ruin everyone else. But I think what we're getting at more now with the semi-cooperative style is getting away from just the pure, you're a mole to, we just have different objectives and those things just naturally pull us apart because we're different players, we have different styles of play. We share a same goal, and that's where, you know, we all, at least at the Swamp, we all have to make sure that we get those three samples of Kingsfoil and then exit the Swamp alive, otherwise none of us are going to win.
Right.
We have to work together as so far as we can accomplish that goal, but the rest of our objectives, I mean, they're completely different, and they have, and they're all secret, so you don't know if I'm also interested in picking up some exotic animals along the way, or you don't know if I'm also interested in, you know, taking this path up towards the top of the map because, well, I want to make sure that you don't get the heart root that's down here towards the bottom that just makes me feel like you're trying to collect that. But it's subtle enough that it doesn't feel like I'm just kind of stabbing you in the back because you don't know all of my different motivations. You don't know why I'm taking the boat up to the top. Maybe there's something else up there that I really want or feel like we need. So it kind of takes away that element of, you know, feeling really angry with somebody because they're moving the boat in a different direction that you want.
Right.
It seems like an evolution of the quasi-cooperative mechanism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and it's it does a couple of neat things too, Dennis, that I want to touch upon because somebody had mentioned them in the Reddit thread that we had going on earlier too, a couple of days ago. One of which is it really takes away that alpha player element of pure co-op games because nobody can really tell the other people, well, if you just do this, then I'll do this on my turn, and then Fred does this on that turn, and Sally does this, and we're gonna win the game because they don't know what you want or what you need. So, well, they may have some suggestions for how to avoid the croc. For all they know, though, you really need to get that mushroom that's up in the upper right-hand corner. So you're going to try your best to get up there, even if it gets you pretty close to the croc as well. The other thing that happens, too, is somebody had mentioned that, you know, there are six character cards that come with the base game. And they were saying, you know, well, what's going to stop somebody from just memorizing those cards? The cards are, if four people are playing or three people are playing or whatever, whatever character cards you're not using, they go face down back into the box. So right there's two cards that nobody knows about in the game. Plus, you know, it's up to everybody else to sort of try their best to keep their motivations hidden, as best they can. Obviously, if you play the game a lot and you know that there's one character that needs to get, say, five or seven Kingsfoil, and I am consistently going for more than three Kingsfoil, you may guess that that's me. But with every character also having two options to win, two different goals that they're going for, that I may have that same character and opt to try and win using their secondary goal too, or their second goal as well. So each player is always going to have two ways that they could potentially win the game and two things that every other player is going to have to sort of keep an eye out for. And I don't think people would really run into that unless they either have the kind of memory that I certainly don't, where they could easily count cards and know exactly what everything, you know, the kind of people who can sit down and play blackjack or poker and know everything that's coming up. Yes, they may be able to intuit what cards are sort of out there for characters. And also you're going to have to play the game quite a bit to really get a feel for what everybody's doing.
Yeah. And even if that's the case, even if you do figure out what another character is, you still have to kind of play your cards right to get the boat to move the number of spaces you need to. So there's that balancing element of just because you have the information, just because I know you're, you know, in some games, you know somebody's the mole and suddenly it's over because you figured it out. Well, that's not the case here. You still have to play your cards right so that you can get the boat the direction you want it to go. And also something else about the kind of the mole aspect is I think that sometimes players really kind of get nervous about playing the mole, or they don't want to be that character because they're like, well, I have a hard time lying to people. I have a hard time kind of telling people I'm doing one thing, but really I'm trying to do something else. And there's not really that element in this game because from the get-go, we all know that we have different objectives and different goals. So you don't have to kind of pretend to be somebody that you're not. Although you may try to steer the boat in different directions to kind of help lead people a little bit astray, but you don't have to actually vocalize, you know, that you're on their side when really you're not. You know, to top it all off, we have all these characters. They're obviously unique, but we do have in mind another character in one of the stretch goals that is kind of participates more like a mole. So if that's something that you're looking for, that is something that we're hoping to get to. And I won't give away too many details about that, but basically this person, has a thrill for big game hunting.
And, I was just, checking the Kickstarter here, Dennis. We just hit 85%.
Excellent. That's awesome.
Let's talk about the Kickstarter a little bit. I know this seems to be a trend now amongst, game companies to use Kickstarter instead of the traditional method of funding it all themselves and publishing it, a game that way. And some people feel Kickstarter is not intended for that, that, you know, if you've done it the other way and you're a big company or whatever, like you should continue to do that. It should be more for the independent, type of people. And other people say, well, if it's going to help games get out quicker or easier or get more input from the fans, it's a good thing to do. But why did you choose Kickstarter and why did you want to go with a crowdsourced funding method for Swamped?
Sure. I feel like it's the obvious choice for us. We're a small company. We're still getting started. About other games, I've had one earlier game that I did in 2010 that I didn't really publish traditionally. That was called Dropsite. It's a really fun 2-4 player card game. It won an international design award. And then the second game we did was Antidote, and we had that on Kickstarter last June through July. There's Dropsite right there. Thanks, Ben. And yep, there's Antidote right there. And so I've been following Kickstarter for about 5 or 6 years. And watching and paying attention and doing the readings and doing the research about how it can be successful and just the amazing thing, the amazing group of people that you can bring together to make a game happen. It's really important that, especially for a small company, that you're getting kind of the fans for the game before you go into production. Cause there are so many games out there that it's important to kind of establish your base before you move forward. And, Kickstarter is just an amazing way to do that. And through the process, through doing the Kickstarter for Antidote and having a really successful campaign and, you know, getting over 2,000 people that pledged to support and back that project, you know, those are people that, they all had input in how the game was eventually kind of the final bits of it. They all had comments throughout the way to kind of lead us to make it even better and to make it into something that they wanted. And then they're also the champions and they're the fans that, you know, once the game comes out that they play it with their friends and they show people how to play it and they say, hey, look at this cool game that, you know, I got off Kickstarter, I backed it, didn't know what it was about, but now I'm enjoying it and having a great time with it. So I've gotten a chance to really interact with all those people and I just love the passion, the support, the friendship, kind of the camaraderie that they all share. And that is a really big encouragement and I think it really helps you to go forward and say, we believe it's good. We know it's good, but this group of people, they also have demonstrated that they believe it's good and that they like it and that's the whole point of creating games is that people play it and they enjoy it and they like it. So, I think not only is it important just from a practical standpoint to get it done, but it's also it allows us to see more quickly people just enjoying our project and enjoying the game and giving them opportunity to play it and be part of the whole process. So, it's a no-brainer for me to go through Kickstarter. I think, you know, you talk about other larger more established companies sometimes using Kickstarter and whether that's not okay or whether they should just do the traditional model. I don't really have a strong opinion about that. I personally like it. I have enjoyed all the interactions and the people that I've met through Kickstarter and so it's something that we'll continue to choose, you know, as long as we either need to or as long as we have time to do it.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to note too that Kickstarter isn't just a crowdfunding platform anymore. When it first started out, that was all it was. You click the button, you pledge some money, maybe you left a comment. And then these things called stretch goals sort of evolved out of that. Now, Kickstarter is almost its own social media platform as well. Mm-hmm. It's a great place for people to connect, for like-minded people to connect. And with our Kickstarter, Dennis, you and Jonathan set up something really kind of unique, I think, and neat with the stretch goals too. Which is that there's this sort of flow chart of stretch goals and it's up to the community. It's up to the backers to decide which ones we're going to open first by basically just voting in the comments, you know, saying, I want this or I want that. And voting is, it does a couple of things. It lets you, the backers, decide what's going to get opened up first. It also encourages folks to get on the comments and start talking a lot, which encourages more discussion about the game, which is always a good thing for everybody involved. You know, the folks who are backing it, they're going to get more of a feel for what's going on and they're going to maybe, you know, find other people that are of the same mind as them. And for us, we can see, particularly for Dennis, who's actually the one running the Kickstarter, exactly what people are talking about and what interests them the most.
Before we get to the stretch goals, because that's something I've never seen done before this way on a Kickstarter, and so I do want to talk about that. But why don't we just back up a minute and explain what the project itself is, how much you're looking to raise, how long people have to do it, and what the different backing levels are. What do people get for the money that they're given?
Sure. Well, we've been able to, first of all, we've been able to establish a really great kind of base pledge level. I think, first of all, there's also the $1 pledge, which we have available for people to, they can pledge the $1 pledge and get access to the print and play, which is using the demo artwork. And they can also follow along the campaign that way and get all of our updates. But, that first base pledge is only $12 plus shipping, $2 shipping in the United States. So we feel like it's a really reasonable price point for people to become involved in the campaign and get a copy of Swamped. And that's where the majority of our backers have been coming in, at this point. Then there's a couple other levels where you can add on extra copies of Swamp if you want to maybe get a copy for your friend, or if you think that several of your family members might like a copy, you can add up to six copies of Swamp. We also have a premium backer level, and the premium backer is $75, and that's just somebody who takes a little bit more of ownership of the campaign. We're going to include their name and their picture on the campaign backer page on our website. We did this for the Antidote campaign, and those filled up really quickly. And you can see all those backers on our webpage right now. This person also gets their name in the rule booklet, and that's kind of a special thank you at the back of the rule booklet. And for our Antidote campaign, we're going to include all those in our future printings as well. So your name is going to be included as kind of a premium backer for a long time to come. Above that, we also have two other kind of premium support levels. There is the Herbologist. The Herbologist is one of the characters in the Swamp campaign. If you go to the Kickstarter campaign page, you'll notice that we've only shown pictures of four of the different characters or adventurers. The two final adventurers in the base game are the Herbologist and the Executive. The Herbologist is somebody that's been hired to kind of come in, and they're a specialist in finding things like kingsoil and being able to identify it for the rest of the company. So that person's really important to the team. And so if you choose that pledge level, that's a $300 level, and we're going to actually take a picture and take your likeness, and we're going to translate that into one of the adventurer cards, so that you can kind of be immortalized in the game, so to speak. And then we also have a thank you, in your picture on our backer page, as well as a thank you in your picture in the rule booklet. And then the executive level is the $500 level, and that's actually already been selected. And that's similar to the Herbologist. We're going to use your picture, your likeness to craft the executive character. And the executive, just kind of the background behind that is, he's somebody from kind of a direct representative from the company that hired you all to go into the Swamp. And so, the executive's main goal is just to keep the task on mission and to get you in and get you out of the swamp quickly so that you can not get eaten by the crocodile. So that level, like I said, has already been chosen. So we're really excited and thrilled that somebody has already chosen that and decided to support us at that way. And so we're looking forward to working with them more and seeing what some of the additional comments they have about the campaign.
What if, heaven forbid, someone doesn't back at the Herbologist level? Will that character still be in the game?
Sure, absolutely. Oh, yeah. We'll find a different likeness to use, and we'll create the adventurer card that way.
And then, maybe we'll use you, Dennis. You should be in the game.
There you go.
And I just want to point out too that with the $12 level, $14 shipped to the United States, if anybody here likes Starbucks, that's like going to Starbucks three, maybe four times, and you've just gotten yourself a brand new game and also helped support the campaign. There aren't too many other Kickstarters out there right now where you can get a game, I think, of this high quality component-wise and gameplay-wise and replayability for $14. That's just something you're not going to find all that often.
I totally agree, and that's one of the reasons we've tried to keep the price as low as we have. Because we want it to be accessible to people. We want it to be something you can just pick up quickly, but also have a great time with it. And that's definitely those things. So yeah, $14, pretty easy pickup. And I think you'll find that it's definitely worth the money, when we finish with it.
So things seem to be doing well for the Kickstarter and so far as it to be successfully completed. I don't want to, say anything to jinx things or anything, but to me, it looks like, and actually from the first moment I heard about the game, to me, it seemed like a guaranteed success, although I don't want to say that, just because I don't want anything bad to happen. But so let's say it gets funded and you make the game and stuff. What about people who weren't able to get into the Kickstarter and they want to buy it afterwards? Will they be able to do so? And do you have an idea what price point would be there for that sort of thing? And how would people be able to obtain it?
Sure. Well, I guess to answer your previous question too a little bit further, the funding level we chose was 8,500. And so we're about 85% of that as of this morning. So we're getting close to the funding level. To answer the second part of the question, I'll just kind of go back to what we did for our first campaign, and kind of tell you how that functioned. We obviously want to respect, and we do respect and are really excited for all the backers that pledged during the campaign. So we will, they're kind of our primary focus and our primary goal. We want to make sure that they feel, you know, delighted with the product that they end up getting. So we will eventually, plan to open up the Swamp for additional people to get it, because we want as many people to play it as possible. We think it's something that a lot of people will enjoy. And so we did open up Antidote, last year, not too long after the campaign, and then we opened it up on our website. But we asked, for a couple more dollars for it. And then we also just made sure to kind of hang on to our Kickstarter backer as a priority as far as communication was concerned, and priority as far as getting the game first, after it finally gets to the United States. So, that's something that we are hoping and endeavoring to make sure is that all our backers get, you know, get their copies first, as, you know, before it goes to anyone else, and that we just do a good job communicating with them and making sure that, you know, they're happy and pleased with the product. And then they also get that extra, you know, that small discount on the front end as well. And there's also, you know, there's no guarantee going into the future too. If, you know, if we do additional printings, you know, it's possible that the game, some of the extra cards may change or things like that. So we, you know, if you want to get in on the Kickstarter, then that kind of ensures that you're getting everything, you know, completely as it shows on the Kickstarter page, and that, you know, just in case we have to change something in the future for whatever reason, that they're going to make sure you're going to get in on that, the basic level, the front level, and get everything that's included.
Hearing your dedication to the Kickstarter backers is music to my ears, because, as a backer of Swamped, but also someone who's backed many other Kickstarter projects, I've seen and heard far too many times, and I'm not saying Bellwether Games would ever do this, but other companies maybe coming into some issues with things and then releasing the product to non-backers first. I know this happened at the most recent Gen Con, where, I mean, they had to get it out to Gen Con because it's Gen Con, right? And backers, meanwhile, still didn't even have this stuff mailed to them yet. And Joe Schmo could walk into Gen Con and buy it. And to know that you wouldn't do that, I think that has to be not only encouraging to me, but also encouraging to other potential backers, because if people want to back a Kickstarter project, I think part of it is that you know it's going to come out at whatever time is said for delivery. But I think the unspoken understanding, or hope anyway, for a backer is that, well, if I'm backing now, I get first dibs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we're fortunate. I mean, we've done a lot of research. We've looked into it. We have going into a campaign, I'm not quiet about the fact that I would hope that the game could get in distribution, and that I could hope, you know, would hope that Swamp would get into game store shelves and sell and do well and continue to grow as a product. And I don't think anybody would be surprised to hear me say that. And we think it's a great game and that it would get to that point. And so we're fortunate that we found a distributor who understands the Kickstarter mentality, understand how important the backers are. So, we've been working with that distributor. You know, we've been able to set up a plan so that we can get the backer pledges out first. And the distributor understands that. They understand that, you know, it takes a little bit of time for all the pledges to go out. It takes a little time for them to get mailed around the world to different backers. So, we have some set up so that, you know, it doesn't get into the stores until after the backers get it. I mean, it just takes a little bit of setting that up. And I think that's just one of the challenges, is sometimes the fulfillment is so much harder. And it's difficult to do, and it's difficult to get set up, that maybe other campaigns, I'm not saying, I don't know which campaign in particular does this, but maybe they have trouble, you know, just getting it all fulfilled, because it's a large task to get out hundreds or thousands of units, in a short period of time. So, fortunately with Antidote in particular, the campaign, we were able to do it. We had a fulfillment company that they got them all out very quickly. And then our distributor held up their side of the bargain, and the extra copies weren't released until, about 2 weeks after the rest of the copies out. And now Antidote is in the stores, and it's doing very well, and it's getting picked up very quickly. We actually sold out of our first into distribution. So I think that's kind of the best case scenario for everyone, is that, you know, as a backer, you get your game, you get it first, you get, you know, you're the priority, and then you have the ability of telling your friends, hey, I just played this game, or we just played this game with your friends and they want to go buy a copy. Well, they know that not too long from then they can actually go get their own copy. So I think that's the best case scenario for everyone.
Well, absolutely, because if you're backing it, it's because you've either played it and liked it, or you think you will like it, and you want more people to like it and get it, and not, for whatever reason, some people either don't or can't back a Kickstarter, and So once it's a success and it's able to get into the stores, it benefits the whole gaming community, really.
Sure.
Exactly.
So why don't we talk about the person who is looking at the Kickstarter and says, you know, this looks kind of interesting, but they're hesitant. What would you say is the main reason or enticement for them? Like, what gets them to get off the fence and go ahead and pledge and say, I want to do the Swamp Kickstarter as opposed to any other Kickstarter or as opposed to not backing anything?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is that the faster you get on board with it and the more people that get on board with it more quickly, that enables us to really build more into the project. So the base game that we've released that we've promised all of our pledgers right now is great in its own right. And we think it's had a lot of fun, a lot of replayability. But we have more to add to it. And there is expansions that are planned and there are bonus cards and additional artwork and some upgrades to the components, which those are all extra expenses for us. So we have to raise more money to make it, you know, kind of fiscally, a good fiscal decision in producing those extra things and adding them to the game. But whenever we add those things, the more pledges and the more backers we have, it doesn't actually add to the backers' cost at all. I mean, you're still pledging the same amount you're getting more for it. So the more people that jump on board during the Kickstarter campaign, the more that we can offer and include in the box by the time, you know, it gets shipped out. So for example, when we ran the Antidote campaign, you know, we started off offering about 60 cards in the box and we asked for a pledge of about $16. By the end of the campaign, you know, the box that we're offering now is 102 cards with about 4 different expansions. And who wouldn't rather get that than, exactly, you know, than the 60 cards, no expansions. I mean, you want more content, and if it doesn't cost you anything additional, then that's excellent. So this is really a thing where go tell your friend who might be interested. Go tell your, you know, your cousin who might be interested. Go tell your grandma who, you know, just wants to, you know, help you out with something. Get them on board, not because, you know, not because we're, you know, begging for any extra product, but because we can include more for you and for everybody else, and you'll have a better time with the game. So the sooner the better. And also the sooner the better because it allows us to, first of all, navigate through those stretch goals more quickly, and also gives you more voice in what is included. So that's where Ben was talking about kind of the unique stretch goal and the flow chart, which we're calling the tech tree. You know, if you feel more strongly about the bonus cards than you do about the upgraded components, well, go on to the campaign pledge and then voice your opinion about what you think we should go after first so that those things are a priority, in the campaign.
Right. And let's be realistic here too. I mean, if this is Kickstarter, and while yes, all Kickstarters are a little bit of a risk, I mean, the Earth could get hit by a comet tomorrow. And if that happens, this Kickstarter probably will not be delivered. But we'll all be worried about far, far different things than that. But Dennis and Bellwether Games, they produced Antidote. They did a great job on the game. Components are amazing and they did get it, done and delivered. Despite the fact that there was a West Coast, labor freeze for the ports and other unforeseen things that, you know, that may have happened. So I personally, in this Kickstarter, I don't view this, as much of a risk really. Dennis has done this before and I'm sure he's going to do it again after this as well. And when you think about it, really, I mean, if you want to get in for the base game, for all of the stretch goals and all that stuff, I'll just reiterate again. I mean, it's $12 plus shipping. That's not a terrible financial risk either. So if the one thing that's keeping you from going on Kickstarter and backing the $85 game with 600 minis in it is that it may not, you know, something may happen unforeseen. Well, not that I'm saying that that's going to happen with this campaign, because again, Dennis, you've already done it, once before with Antidote. It's $12. You know, it's just $12 out of pocket plus $2 shipping if you're in the US. So it's not going to cause you to, you know, miss having food on the table for the rest of the year or something like that. You know, we're not talking about the Ogre Special Edition here or anything.
Yep, well said. I mean, we tried to keep the price point as low as possible because we wanted to make it accessible to people. We feel like it's a great game that people, you know, should play and that they'd be interested to play. It's unlike a lot of the comments we've heard is it's unlike any gaming experience, you know, they've had, or something completely new and unique. And, you know, for $12 and to try something completely new and unique, that's also a lot of fun. I think it's, we think it's worth it, to hop on board and to help it have as much content as possible.
Right. And as a backer too, and as a fan of Bellwether Games for Antidote, the game that came out, and I think Dennis, you're getting a lot of these comments as well. I mean, the components in this game are fantastic. The box is amazing. It's nice and sturdy. The rule book is excellent. All the cards are great. So you're going to get a lot of game in this little game for $12 as far as the components are concerned too.
you mentioned that the goal is to raise at least $8,500. Yeah. Gets it funded, and then beyond that will be stretch goals. How much time do people have to back? Like, when's the deadline?
28 days from today. So June 6th is the final day that people can pledge. That will go by quickly, though. So hop on early on, and you'll have more of a voice in what's going on with the campaign. You get to follow the entire campaign from start to finish. And we try to communicate and send out updates pretty regularly. And we're going to send out updates as far as the artwork, all those things are concerned. So don't wait. Sooner is better as far as that's concerned. And it helps us also to plan out the stretch goals a little bit better and make sure that we're able to get as many or most of them as possible.
And speaking of the stretch goals, like, when do they take effect? At what price point do they happen? Like, when you raise $10,000, when you raise $9,000?
Sure. Yeah. Well, it really depends on kind of which one we go after. So whenever the final decision is made about which scoring track or which tech tree we go after, then we'll be able to make a final decision about how much it's going to be. But,
well, let's say people go for the one that I think they should go for, which is the upgraded components. Nudge, nudge, everyone vote for upgraded components. So let's say that's the one that happens, right? Like, when does that happen?
Yeah, well, as soon as we reach the 8,500, then we'll release that next amount. But it's going to be about $2,500 extra for that first goal.
That's pretty exciting. In the stuff that's in the Kickstarter regarding the stretch goals, they all look really cool. I've been following some of the voting on it, and mm-hmm. I'm kind of surprised, actually, that one part of the tech tree is lagged behind as much as it has, but I'm not surprised that the other two are almost dead neck and neck.
Yeah, the artwork variant seems to not be getting a lot of love right now, which is interesting to me, because I think, because Jonathan's a fantastic artist and graphic designer, and he's got some cool concepts planned for some of the kind of unique art variants that we're going to include. But yeah, the two that are neck and neck that you're describing are the upgraded components, as well as the bonus cards. And so we have two bonus cards planned along that track. The first one we've revealed is the starter map. So there's a starter map that the boat starts on. And this one is an alternate, it changes up the gameplay a little bit, lets you start the game a little differently. And then over in the upgraded components, the first one we have revealed is to upgrade the boat from a wooden cube token to, shaped like a boat token, basically. And obviously it costs extra for us to get, you know, to get something die cut like that, and make sure that it's, getting it done professionally and cut correctly and all that takes extra time and tooling costs and things like that on the manufacturing side. So that's why I included it as a stretch goal instead of in the base game. Cause to have a great experience with it, you don't need those things. But they're fun, obviously, and they add a little bit of a touch to the game.
And I've got to say, following the comments as well, some people have come up with some really reasonable arguments for both the bonus cards mm-hmm. and the upgrade components too. You know, the bonus cards are, let's get more into the game as soon as we can so that we'll change gameplay a little bit. But then somebody will come in from the upgraded component side and say, yeah, but if the components are better, we're going to have those forever. And they can always come out with a add-on pack for this later on. So it's interesting to see those two sides sort of battle it out in the comments.
Yeah, that's been a lot of fun watching those and kind of cheering people on and trying to remain impartial on my side.
Yeah.
People love meeples that look like what they're supposed to be. Like, I love Carcassonne, right? But I would love it even better if they were actual, like, meeples that represented the sheep or like a farmer meeple as opposed to just the generic person right. meeple. Right. And the chance to have a boat meeple that's a boat, I mean, that's amazing. And that's actually what drew me to the upgrade components, and I'm hoping what will draw everyone else to it as well. But that's just my own little upgrade. No, but really, I don't think people can go wrong with whatever tech tree aspect that they want to go for, whatever branch. They all sound amazing, and even if you disagree with me, which I know people won't, but even if you do, you can't go wrong, whether it's added to the extra bonus cards or the art variants. It's going to make the game better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can't talk much more about anything that hasn't been revealed yet. But I can say that I really hope we reach them because some of them are really fantastic too.
Yes, there's really, really fun stuff coming up. And again, that goes back to just backing the project early and getting in mm-hmm. on it. So that we can move more quickly through them and reach all those, all the stretch goals towards the end.
So I'm going to ask each of you, if you had just like a one sentence or two sentence pitch to try to convince someone who hasn't or to raise their backing level, what would it be? Why don't we start with you, Ben? What would be your like quick sell for someone?
Take your favorite 2-4 player $40 to $60 game and take all the things that you like the most about it, compress it down into a small box for $12, and that's Swamped.
And how about you, Dennis?
Fast, quick, unlike anything you've ever played. This game is going to be even better the more that you commit to it. So get in early.
And for people who want to just keep up to with what's going on, both with Swamped and with what each of you are doing online, how would they do that? What websites would they go to? What's best ways to contact you? Dennis, do you want to start us off?
Sure. Just head over to bellwethergames.com or email me at dennis@bellwethergames.com. We're also on Facebook as well as Twitter and Google+. So you can find us any of those places.
And how about you, Ben?
Well, first, I'd say go to Kickstarter and type in Swamped into the search bar, because you'll find a lot of information about this particular game right there. But if you're looking for me specifically, my website is Troll in the Corner. So trollitc.com or trollitc, you know, do the at sign in front of it for Twitter. You can find me under my own name on G+ or Facebook or just about anywhere else online as well.
Okay. And if the two of you don't mind sticking around just for a few more minutes, I have just a couple other non-interview kind of sections of the show before the episode winds down. I like to do a mailbag section every episode or as much as possible because I really feel that it's important to have a sense of community with people. And I think it's something that you guys are doing with Kickstarter for Swamped. And I think it's really important for podcasts too. So I love being able to hear back from listeners and see what they're doing, what's going on with all of them. And I actually got, we have a Facebook presence, of course, so like who doesn't nowadays, right? But on, at least it feels like it, once they opened it up, so it wasn't just like you have to be in school to have Facebook and everyone's mom and grandma came on, like everyone has Facebook. And maybe sometimes we wish they didn't and sometimes we wish they did, but that's another topic for another day. But on our Facebook page, the other day I happened to mention that our numbers, and I try not to get too caught up in numbers here because numbers are important for, like, say, sales of a game. But for a podcast, for me, it's more about involvement in that community. Are people active and are they interested? And there could be one person listening to Wargaming Recon. And if they're involved, I would much rather that than have 5 million people listening to Wargaming Recon who just don't have that engagement with it. But I happen to mention that on average now, and this blows me away, but on average, 1,200 people listen to an episode of Wargaming Recon, over 1,200. So one of our listeners from Norway, Jamie, he actually commented to just about the stats to say, quote, congrats, here's to the coming bumper year, unquote. And I had promised that if this continues, we should be reaching a huge milestone. And if that happens, I'm going to be making a personal donation to the local Boston Children's Hospital as part of the Extra Life 24-hour Gamerthon, just to kind of say thank you to people for supporting us and giving the show a listen. And that's something, too. I've always felt strongly about giving back whenever possible. And sometimes you hear it, and I think it's mainly not because it's not being done, but because people just don't push it in the limelight. But you hear about game companies and the individuals, how they give back and how they use gaming to enrich their communities and the lives of those around them. So I think that's really important. So I just want to thank Jamie for taking the time to post on our Facebook page for his comments. And here's hoping that it continues on and that things just keep on getting bigger and better. And then also I had posted on our Facebook page some sad news, actually, that I want to just share with people because I know not everyone who listens to Wargaming Recon is on Facebook and checks our Facebook page. But one of our longtime listeners, his name is Andrew. He has suddenly passed away over in Wales. And so I had done a posting that just said, quote, that I'm stunned and terribly saddened to hear of the passing of longtime listener Andrew. He helped to give us the name Wargaming Recon. He was a kind soul who selflessly gave of himself to help those around him. Despite being legally blind, he helped to teach kids how to wargame. We've lost a good friend in his passing. And I just want to ask people to, you know, reach out and remember those around you who maybe have gone before. And just kind of consider ways that you can help to grow the hobby, whether you're playing board games, whether you're playing tabletop games of another type. Just try to bring someone new into it and see whose lives you can touch. And actually speaking of that, I do have just a couple announcements. I want to remind everyone that I will be at HuzzahCon up in Portland, Maine. That is May, 15th to the 17th. And I'm actually going to be a special guest for the convention where I will be doing the very first live in-person recording of Wargaming Recon. So if you're going to be in Portland, Maine, and I suggest you do because it's gorgeous up there, great places to eat, things to see, come on by Sunday, May 17th at 10 a.m. I'll be recording at the convention at the Doubletree in South Portland. Or you can watch live like some of you are doing now for this episode of Wargaming Recon. Just head over to wargamingrecon.com/live, and that'll get you in with that. And then, of course, just a reminder that we've been talking about one crowdsource funding method, Kickstarter, here. But another one that we use for us on Wargaming Recon is Patreon. Just kind of like a tip jar. If you like what we do, head over to wargamingrecon.com/Patreon. Just give it's like a dollar an episode, $2 a month, less than a cup of coffee. And just a way to say thanks, for what we do here. And no matter what, you don't have to remember all the stuff we talked about on the show. Cause one of the cool things, and I know it's something Ben does and I've loved to do for a long time, is to have show notes that just kind of connect you to everything you need. So that way you don't need to remember this web address or that web address or the name of so-and-so, whatever. If you want to go to the Swamped Kickstarter, you don't have to remember what that web address is, right? You can just go to our show notes, wargamingrecon.com/WR135. That's wargamingrecon.com/WR135. And that'll connect you to everything. We'll have links to it. We'll have the contact information for Dennis and for Ben and just, all the stuff that we talked about will be on there, and you'll also be able to find out about upcoming episodes and upcoming live events and all that sort of stuff. So those are just all the usual things for all of you. And if you're new listeners, it's your first time. If you're a longtime listener, you know the deal. So I just want to once again thank both Ben and Dennis for taking the time out of their very busy schedules to come on this live episode. It's been a pleasure talking with both of you, and I appreciate you hanging around for this little extra end of the episode.
Well, thanks, Jonathan, for having us.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I had a great time.
Well, thank you again for coming on, and long-time listeners know what is about to happen. This is the end of the show, so I just want to thank everyone for listening to this episode of Wargaming Recon. We'll, of course, be back with another new episode next time, and until then, no matter how busy you are, no matter how many times you're playing Swamped or backing it on Kickstarter, you have to, you got it, you need to keep on gaming. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon and all of the other podcasts that you know and love. Or you can always stream and download the latest episode of Wargaming Recon by heading on over to the show notes for that episode.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
Geeks Explicitly. New episodes coming at you every Thursday, talking about geek life. If you don't listen to Geeks Explicitly, then only at trollitc.com.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.
Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. Visit www.trollitc.com for more information. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 12-7-games.com.